Grace to come in to do a little bit more talking about 4 and 5, right? So, did you guys enjoy your break? Take advantage of it, yeah? Heard some inventory, took a nap, took a walk, got a massage, and not in that order. So, I promised you we were going to do some Theater of the Lie. Who here knows what Theater of the Lie is?
Theater
of the Lie.
Theater of
the
Lie.
People in my sponsorship lineage came up with this idea of, were you raising your hand or just,
no,
of looking at your third column and kind of looking at it and saying, like, well, what are my attachments? When we talked about attachment, I said attachments aren't bad, we need to have them. I mean, we're attached to our children, we're attached to our family, we enjoy, there are things in life that we enjoy, but it's about having flexibility with these attachments and recognizing that they're tenuous. That they're in our life or part of our life for as long as they are a part of our lives, and when it's no longer serviceable or it's no longer God's will, we allow them to leave because we realize that something new is coming in, right? And that's all well and good, but a lot of times in our relationships, in these areas of our life that we kind of talked about in terms of the devilments, we have characters that kind of show up. And it's kind of a cheeky way of looking at the third column of your fourth step. It's also a really cheeky way of looking at your fourth column. And what it does is it very much connects the third column of your resentment inventory with your fear inventory. Because I probably learned more here this weekend than you guys have in terms of just talking to you guys and getting some new information and different stuff. That's why I love doing what I do. But by me, I'll have people tell me that they've done a four step. And I'll ask a question. I'll say, well, did you do a sex ideal? What's that? Did you write fear inventory? Huh? Well, what did your fourth column look like? What? And it turns out that a lot of times people, you know, think that they're writing an inventory, but they're kind of not. And so this is a really neat little trick that kind of helps people who are new to the inventory process to really get a nice, in-depth view of it, rather than just like the pure kind of like, okay, I was selfish. And it really helps, and the reason why I really like doing this is because it really helps with step 10. Because when you identify what your cast of character is, and you find that you're agitated or doubtful, you find that you find selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear cropping up throughout your day, you can kind of identify like a cluster or a character that's showing up that has these behaviors, beliefs, defects. So in essence, while you're watching, what you're watching is for your cast of characters to show up in your life. So I want to take a piece of inventory. Who wants to give me a resentment inventory? We'll take it across the resentment and fear and conduct.
I just did one of these, which is one of the things I like to do when I come down. My name's Tracy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tracy!
Is to make sure that I do an annual fourth.
True.
Got it. So, I start with a when, 12, 14, what is the event, mm-hmm. is Jen, my wife, continues to do for my stepson what he can do for himself, enable it.
Jen.
Yep, okay. Jen is the person.
Person.
The activity, the two examples used are, she drives Riley around, this is an 18-year-old boy, mm-hmm. including when it encroaches on our time together. Mm-hmm. She's also calling to find him a place to stay. He's getting ready to leave on his own, mm-hmm. and these are things that I feel he should be doing himself. So she's helping him to avoid the consequences of his own inaction. So, those are the two specifics.
Okay. So, the Jen is enabling, i.e. driving around, helping him to avoid.
Yep.
Okay. So what is your third, and you know, we use columns, people use lacrosse. I don't like that, because I have a lot to write. What I like to do is either take a spiral bound notebook, fold it in half and half, and I have four columns, or do it this way, which is list it down the page. Gives you a lot of room. So, Jen, that's first column, second column, what? Third column's right here. So, how is your self-esteem being impacted?
I put violates my sense of right and wrong, my pride, Tracy knows best, ego. She would rather be spending time, energy, etc., with him than me.
But how does that make you feel about yourself? Because self-esteem is how I feel about me. Mm-hmm. It is, you do something and it impacts how I feel about me. So when she
less
asks
than.
Him, what?
Less than.
Less than. Pride. How does that impact your pride? Well, whenever all these people see your wife coddling your stepson,
mm-hmm.
What do you think about you? Who's the most important man? Who's the alpha in that household?
That would be Riley. My testicles just shrank 2 centimeters. Stand comfortably between two opposing truths.
Exactly.
And that, so find that and be okay in that uncomfortableness.
Exactly, and that's what we really struggle with. You know, we call that cognitive dissonance, meaning that we struggle with two opposing truths occurring at the same time, same place, and how can they both be true? And especially if they conflict with mine. How can I tolerate your conflicting truths and mine at the same time and still honor you? And honor me, that's a real thing that we struggle with, and that's the emotional maturity that occurs through this process, but it's not, oh, I have emotional maturity here, and I can be really emotionally mature over here. And there's that other struggle, and that's the other pride, is that, now let's look at this and say, okay, so I'm not the alpha male of my household. But the other part of pride is, people see me struggling with this, and think that I'm less than spiritually. People will judge my spirituality, or people will judge my ability to be a stepdad. So then there's that other part of it, and pride. It's not only just am I competing for the same dinner bowl, but I'm also the struggle with it and the struggle outside that people see that and might believe that, you know, I'm not who I say I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then we have judgment too, right?
Yep.
So, how are your personal relationships doing with this? How's your personal relationship with your stepson? How's it impacting that?
I gotta go back and out of the thing, because it's example by example. And mm-hmm. This one happens to be, you know, with the driving and that kind of stuff. This doesn't really impact that much in terms of my personal relationship with him.
How about your personal relationships with other men?
With other males?
Yeah. So you're competing for the same dinner bowl in your family, feeling a little less than, a little underloved. How does that show up in your other relationships? Do you feel like the need to prove? Do you overcompensate with spirituality? You know, sometimes when I'm feeling kind of inferior spiritually, I overcompensate and I put on my spiritual person cape and say, look, I am impenetrable child of God. In reality, I'm shivering inside, but I'm going to project that I'm the Allah and the Buddha and I'm like the Zen master, even though all the stuff's going on inside me.
Well, I'm the super non-enabler because I see that happening in relationships around me, and so I'm going to be the guy that I'm not going to have a kid, you know, eating Doritos, sitting in my basement at 18 years old. Oh my gosh, darn, no way.
I should know better. Sure. Intolerant.
What'd you say?
Intolerant.
Meaning that I take something in that happens in one relationship, I generalize it to others and become intolerant of behaviors. So I see enabling going on in my household, so when I see, say, a Swan Z engaging in enabling behavior, it might make me twitch a little bit, right? You gotta bite that.
And I volunteered for this, I just wanted to make
it. And bite the top. Means that you need to have like a bat of KY. I am a proctologist. So, I don't know how that works. So sex relationships, how's that showing up?
You know, actually the tension then that's caused, be the friction then that's caused between my wife and I over issues like that, then does impact that sex relation. Yep.
How about this?
For better or for worse?
I'd be a whole lot more tolerant if I were.
Where she needs to choose between you and her son.
Right.
I'm producing resentment. I guarantee you're producing resentment. If I could choose between two people that I love, and I know that inevitably I'm going to make one of them unhappy, I might have some refelt emotion regarding that. I don't mean that I'm angry, but I might feel like that the moms are down their head, they're like, why do I always have to feel like somebody's unhappy in my life? Like, why can't I just be everything to everybody? So is it possible that your wife is feeling a little push-pull in the household, in the relationship?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Now, think about this. You're fighting for the dinner bowl with your stepson. There's push-pull in your relationship in the household a little bit of tension, maybe not as friendly and affectionate as it could be. So what happens? What do you do with that? Do you internalize that? Do you take that to the gym? Do you take that other places? Do you throw yourself into spiritual work? Where are you taking that energy that's showing up there?
I've got a core group of guys that I talk to. So I have good relationships in my life that I can share what's going on.
So you're taking the intimacy that's kind of going over here, that's a little hurt by this situation, and you're taking that need and you're placing it in appropriate areas.
Yeah, we also, my wife and I have been together for 11 years and had a counselor every third week for the entire 11 years.
Which is because sometimes this may not be your experience, but I'm going to throw it out there because when we're struggling with our sex relations, that's an energy, that's a need that we have. And it's a need for intimacy. And when we have a need for intimacy that maybe is being impacted or affected by a situation, a resentment, a circumstance in our lives, we seek it. And order seeks its own level. And therefore we will seek that intimacy. Sometimes we do it constructively in the iron-john sort of way. You know, when we create that cadre of, you know, of like, you know, people in our life that are our supports, and we kind of get that need met in other places in an appropriate way. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we take it to the gym and we obsessively work out. Sometimes we take it to the computer, and you can extrapolate what that might be. Sometimes we take it to the food. You know, we seek comfort if we can't obtain it in the appropriate ways. For women, we do it with validation. Like, you know, you come home and, you know, you're gussied up, and this has happened to me so many times, like, I'll, like, get my hair done, and I'll be all, like, you know, like, and I rarely do it, because I'm so not a girly girl, so, like, if I've actually wandered out of the house and into a salon to get the little bit of hair that I do have cut and, like, styled in some way, it's probably because I'm not feeling great about myself in the first place, and then I come home and my husband goes, it's too short. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to kill you. You're not going to wait for a month. You know, but on the other hand, sometimes, and like I said, not with you, but I'm just kind of using this as an example, that sometimes we'll look for validation in other places. Sometimes we redouble our efforts, we put that into work. You know, like if my wallet's really big, even though maybe, you know, there's a little intimacy missing in that relationship, I compensate for it here. Sometimes we do it in being Mr. AA and Mrs. AA. Sometimes we do it by being the hot tamale. We all know what the hot tamale is, right? I'm going to put on the tidiest t-shirt and the shortest pair of shorts, and I'm going to get coffee in the middle of the meeting and sashay across the meeting. But, watch it. Right? Sometimes we do that. So when we're looking at sex relations, we're not just looking at the relationship with our significant other. We're looking at how we relate to the opposite sex. Or we're looking at where am I putting that energy if it's being thwarted here. So in sex relations, you have ambition. What's your ambition? What do you want?
When I got into AA, I was the guy you wouldn't leave your house plant with over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I was irresponsible. I was, I avoided, I was, all of those things. As I've started to just put a life together, I am, I hope in a good way, but I'm proud of the man I'm becoming and my capacity to be a responsible stepfather.
So I want to be ambitious.
Excuse me. So part of my ambition is that.
Okay.
Is that fruition?
Can it? So I want to be responsible. I have terrible memories. Excuse me. Stepdad. What about a kind of virtue? I mean, that's what that sounds like you're trying to be, right?
You bet.
Integrity, virtue. Right. So my ambitions are to be a man of virtue. Yet I'm resenting an 18-year-old because he gets to eat Doritos and I don't. So am I really being a man of virtue in this scenario? See, look, this is why I'm called Peter the Lock. So, like, so you guys have touched this, and this is why this is something we don't do brain surgery on ourselves, guys. Solitary self-appraisal, self-suffice, because that sounded really good, and I heard you, and I'm with you, and then I went, he's pissed off that he gets to eat Doritos, and he doesn't. You gotta go out and work, and you work really hard to be responsible. Meanwhile, this one's at home, getting his tummy rubbed, eating Doritos in the basement, probably playing Xbox, and Lord knows what else, and you're footing the bill. You're a little pissed off about that. So that's
close.
You've dealt it, so it's not like, you know, like, I'm right here with you. So, like, so my ambition is to be a person of virtue and integrity, yet in this little tiny thing that's going on, I'm maybe not living up to that, right? You know, so if you would change, I would be more virtuous.
I can help out with that.
Yes. I'm in your car.
I know. So I need to be changed by the virtue, right? Page 75, personal relations, sex relations, ambition, security. So, security. How secure? They need to feel safe with yourself. How is that showing up in this?
Well, you hit it earlier, which is, it's in some ways, it can boil down to an inner me.
Yeah. And I can't feel safe in my marriage and in trust and love if I feel like I may not be the most important person in my marriage. We all want to feel that. We all want to feel like we're important. That's a natural human need. There's nothing wrong with that. It's when King Baby's, you know, slamming his rattle and is, you know, like, I want you to pay attention to me. I'm important too. So, yeah, him or me. You know, and it's that either or thing. Okay. So, my favorite pocketbook. Okay, so gas money. We get that. We know money. Right? And the fact that your phone built for this Dorito and Xbox addiction. I have a 16-year-old, I'm hearing it. So, what else? What are you not willing to pay up to be free in this situation? What are you holding on to? What's keeping you from reaching freedom or relief in this situation? Who do you want your wife to be? Thank you. Who do you want your wife to be?
I'm struggling with that. I don't know the answer.
Okay. Your wife was different and said no more. Would you feel better about the situation if she enabled less?
I think so.
Okay. So, are you holding your vision of your marriage hostage to this resentment? I would be more happy if you were more different. Isn't that kind of the same thing we're saying here? Mildly. Like, at a level 1. I'm not talking about a level 12 of change your entire personality and who you are.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's, you know, it's her role as a mom. Your idea of a marriage, your idea of what a partner is, your idea of what a family looks like. You have this idea, right?
Mm-hmm. If it helps, then there is something in my own head that when I think about this piece, mm-hmm. that when I look at the grace that she gives Riley, mm-hmm. I also know I get the same grace.
There you go.
So it's, I'm grateful for that. So I guess I want that for myself.
Thank you.
So.
You want her to be yours. And you want it for yourself. What happens when it's not for you and it's for him? What is it that you feel deep down inside? Is it a fear of what's going to happen to him? Is it a fear of your what prices your wife may pay in the future? Is it looking in a mirror to who you were and not liking what you see as to who you used to be or how people used to treat you? I don't know, I'm asking you. What are your thoughts on that?
I am afraid for him. Okay. There's a lot of things about him mm-hmm. that mirror me at that age. And I look at that and I go, dude, you got an ass kicking coming your way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You're only in this house for another 6 months or whatever that time frame was. And I'd like for you to go fall down and go boom when we're here to pick you up.
You want control of his fall.
Yeah.
To protect him from your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a beautiful thing, except for it's not your job. That what you need to pay up and be free is your control of your stepson's life and the idea that you're God. And that you have any knowledge or vision or truth or access to. You have no idea what's coming down the pipe for this boy. He could wake up tomorrow and be a normal human being.
No shit.
You're putting you on him. So what you need to pay up to be free is your ideas of who you are and who he is. Because you see yourself as him, so you see yourself as his peer, and you see yourself as competition for your wife. But you're not his peer. You're his parent. But because of your identification with your stepson, you see yourself as a peer. So you put yourself in that spot where it's stuck between your wife and him. Because of your identification with your stepson, that's what you need to pay up. Your over-identification with him. There's always something. And it's never, guys, it's never like, I need to pay $1 million and I'll stop being resentful. When I mean, what do you have to pay up to be free? What idea keeps you stuck? What's the thing, what idea I have is keeping me stuck in this pattern? Because I know Bill meant pocketbook at the time. But if you actually read the 12 and 12 and you actually read what it talks about, he's really talking about the things that are blocking, the things that keep us stuck in these unhealthy patterns and relationships and ideas. So when my sponsor asked me, he said, instead of looking at it in pure monetary terms, look at it in time and energy. Look at it in terms of how much mental or emotional space is this thing costing you, or spiritual space. What spiritual prices am I paying? And what idea, concept, behavior, action, thing is preventing me from letting go of this, even though I know all of this to be true? Is this making sense to you? Mm-hmm. So, let me say that over-identification. Now here's the deal, and you already helped me with this. The turnaround. What's the turnaround? The turnaround is, are you really resentful at yourself, your wife, or your stepson in this situation? Who are you really mad at? Or is it all the above?
Yeah.
The turnaround. With any well-written inventory, puts ourselves or God back in the first column. God didn't fix you, so you're an asshole, and you hurt me, so I'm mad at you, but I'm really mad at God, because if God fixed you right, you wouldn't be an asshole. Or I'm mad at myself because I'm letting you bother me. So ultimately, the turnaround is who am I really pissed off at? Am I pissed off at myself for having the resentment in the first place? Or not being able to let go of this specific situation, or the beliefs that I have regarding it. I'm mad at God for not fixing everybody in such a way so that I don't have to be resentful. Am I mad at the individual that's truly in the first column? Or am I mad at the individual who's peripherally involved based on the decisions of the person in the first column? So the truth is you're actually mad at them. Because if God fixed your wife or fixed your stepson, you'd have a seat at the table, or at least wouldn't feel like you didn't. And if God fixed you, you wouldn't feel this way.
Boy, I'm not relating to that at all.
I know, it's hard.
I'm not getting that.
It's hard.
I'm not seeing how adding God in makes that work.
Well, it makes it work in this. Is in most of our resentments, we think we're pissed off at the situation or hurt, interfered with the situation. But when you've done enough work, you have to write the inventory through to come back around to this point. We realize, what are we doing? Where is our dishonesty? Is it in playing God?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if my dishonesty is in playing God, then I'm telling God he's not doing a good job.
Right.
So the truth is I'm not unhappy with God's handiwork.
Whenever I'm resentful, I think I play God.
Exactly.
That's the deal.
Exactly. So if I'm resentful, my dishonesty is that I know better. Because I'm God.
Have we morphed into the fourth column? What's my mistake?
What was that?
Have we morphed into the fourth column?
We're almost there.
What's my mistake?
We're almost there. But there's the turnaround. And so the turnaround is two things. Either, and here's the thing, is where have I done this behavior? So we kind of looked at this and we said that there are a handful of people in this resentment that are attached to this resentment. Yourself, your wife, and your stepson. Okay. So where have you enabled? Have you ever?
Have I ever enabled?
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, yes.
So we're a tiny bit of a hypocrite, right? Do as I do.
Just come up a little.
This is the turnaround. This is where we're going into this fourth column. Because this is a good place to kind of sit and say, because my thing is, I'm allowed to do it because I know my motives. I talked this morning and said, we all judge ourselves by our motives, other people judge us by our actions, right? So I feel entirely justified with whatever asinine crap I come up with because it's my asinine crap. And it makes sense to me, and I tell myself a story to make it all right.
So there's healthy enabling and unhealthy enabling.
Or am I enabling? I thought I was doing the right thing. Yes. So does she. And there it is. There's the crux. The turnaround is where I look and say, where do I engage in this behavior? Where have I done this? Both sides. The stepson in the basement, eating Doritos, playing Xbox, doing nothing. Or the person who's enabling the person who's doing nothing. Most of the time, I've worn that shoe at least once. Maybe not to the magnitude of the individual that I'm inventorying, but I have. And that's the turnaround. That's why I said is that inevitably when we do this after the fourth column, when we come back and we look at the second column, first and second column, at some point, I usually end up being the person that I'm resentful with.
So we're making the sick man prayer come alive.
Exactly. That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's again, we're coming right back around. So though he may be sick.
Yeah.
I don't like how it disturbs us and we're doing it through inventory. That's exactly what we're doing. So we're getting to here and saying, what's the turnaround? The turnaround is, I've done that. And so what we do is we write out, like, give me a circumstance, an idea, or a time, when I've done that.
The sick man prayer, is that the thing in step four where I realize that they're
perhaps like, yeah.
Perhaps he's spiritually sick, though I do not like how it affected me. I like him.
Okay.
Sick too. Right? So then we say that prayer. And that prayer, who here says that between the third and fourth column of their inventory every time? I love you guys. Because I've heard people tell me, they're like, oh, I only had to say that prayer once. Really? And then I hear the fourth column, I'm like, yeah, you should have said that. Right? So we say the sick man prayer. And of course, it is found on page 66 to 67.
Several prayers, actually.
Yes, actually. Thank you for your correction, Mike. I'm teasing you. No, you're right. So it says, this was our course. We read that. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we didn't like their symptoms and the way that they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So there's that question, how am I sick like them? How have I taken actions, attitudes, ideas? How have I behaved in a way that is similar? Because you know what? Think about this. It's the people that often drive us crazy are the people who are most like us. Because they embody the things about ourselves that we don't particularly like. I have a ton of compassion for people who are different than me. I truly do. You know, when I can identify with your motives, and I've worn that shoe, I start feeling that some kind of way about me, and I know I'm looking in the mirror, and I don't like that. And so I have to put it out on you, because I can't feel that unhappiness with me. I need to feel okay with me, because my instincts just told me, my ambition says I have to feel virtuous. My personal relationships say I have to be the most awesome one in the house. My self-esteem says I must always feel good about myself. My sex relations say that I must be the alpha male. So what happens? We're out of female. So what happens is when those things are hurt, threatened, or interfered with, and I'm confronted with the fact that I am absolutely none of those things, am I mad at you for making me feel that way? Or am I disappointed with myself because I'm seeing who I really am? Instead of the story I tell myself about who I am. And that's a really uncomfortable place to be. So I'm going to blame it on you. Because I ain't looking over here. I'm not looking here. So most of us, when we kind of look at this and realize that, you know, I'm looking at my spiritual mirror. So we asked God to help us to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we cheerfully grant to a friend. When the person offended, we say to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. God will not mind me done. He doesn't say, God, fix me so that he can stop pissing me off. But that's really what we do there. You know, I would be more virtuous if you were better. So what I'm really saying is, you need to change for me to be better. Now, I don't realize I'm saying that. I don't realize that's the belief system or the agreement I have. But that's the agreement I'm making with you. Is don't annoy me, and I'll behave. If you annoy me or make me feel like I'm less than, then I'm going to snap at your heels. Like a little chihuahua dog, right?
So I'm a self-seeker, even when I'm trying to be kind. I just want us to be a happy family.
Exactly.
I just want us to get along. I just want him to grow up and be successful.
Yeah. Exactly. But being somebody, but telling somebody that you know, and that's the thing is like my definition of success and your definition of success and his definition of success are very different things. And when I'm imposing my ideas on you, what am I doing? Exactly. Plan God, being dishonest. I'm having spiritual arrogance, spiritual pride. I'm a very spiritual being, and I know what's best for you, Derek. So I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to meet you up and do it.
Good.
and that's the pride of it, right? The thinking I know what's best for you. I don't even know what's best for me. We established that.
Well, what's best for you is not causing me trouble.
Exactly. Because you cause me trouble and you make me misbehave. Because I give you my power. Because my power is on you and not on God. So then it says we avoid retaliation or argument. We would treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view. Notice it's kindly and tolerant view. Sometimes, and I used to read that and I thought that it meant that I have to like everybody. And that I have to be nice to everybody. And I have to be of service to everybody. It says some people you can't. Take a kindly and tolerant view. Yeah, have any of you guys had the impulse to pet a porcupine? You ever want to lick a light socket? Why? Yeah! So, you ever have one of those people who is an emotional, spiritual porcupine? And you keep going up and trying to hug them and make them habitable? I will tame you with my love because I am so spiritual. I will turn your acid holery around and make you awesome. That's pretty arrogant on my part.
Turn your
I will turn your misbehavior around and make you like me. Or at least I will habituate you to being, at least not peeing on my rug. Right? So.
You have a vision for that?
Yes. Yes! So sometimes it's taking a kindly and tolerant view, meaning that I need to remove myself from the situation or relationship and gain perspective. That's why it says that. It says, can I be helpful? How? If I can't, I take that step back. So I have that statement, I love you, but I'll love you from over here. I'm going to stop trying to make you be what I want you to be so that I can be comfortable being around you. If I can't be comfortable being around you because there's really truly something in you that is dangerous to me or toxic to me, it is okay for me to say, you know, it's okay, I'm going to go over here. Because that resentment of me trying to enforce change you so that I can be comfortable is what continually causes harm. There are some people like, you know, are you going to invite the local pedophile home for dinner and let him bounce your kids on the knee? No, we're not going to do that. We take a kindly and tolerant view over here with your kids. You know, real life, right? Same idea. So then when we do that, when we say this prayer, we take a quiet moment, right, or two, or ten, depending on the depth of this resentment, and this is what we do. So what characters, after looking at this extended third column, what characters show up? Like who?
What characters?
Think about it this way. If there was a perfect cast of characters in your play, think of this resentment as being the script that I wrote, a play that I wrote, right? We're using the actor, okay? Now, we might be kind and virtuous, we might be mean or egotistical, depending on what we think we're going to get out of the moment. So who or what character, what actor is showing up in this resentment?
There's four of them, right?
Well, there's as many as you want to be. So, who do you think is showing up?
The alpha man.
Kind and loving.
Ah.
Who wants to be kind and loving?
Spiritual dad?
Yeah, showing up.
No. the all-wise counselor.
Okay.
Alpha Dad.
What was that?
Alpha.
Yeah. Alpha. Who else has shown up?
Virtuous man.
His 18-year-old self.
Thank you. So we'll say bad boy.
Scared kid.
Thank you.
Scared dad.
Jealous husband.
Jealous husband, scared dad. Perfect.
Worried
mom.
Worried. Poor Tracy. I know. We didn't even
hear the fourth comment. Good. We're good. We signed up.
Perfect. What else is showing up here? What about the provider? I work my hiney off, and I provide for this family, and I feel like it's not being appreciated. Provider, right?
Where's a part of this that I look at most of this kind of stuff relationally, mm-hmm. and I look at them as challenges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go out and I first just try not to act badly in the circumstance or situation. Mm-hmm. I get the hell out. I make sure that I love you from here. Mm-hmm. And then I go do this, mm-hmm. and I then can come back with something that makes a little more sense than what it did in the moment, mm-hmm. from the resentment that exists as we described. Is mm-hmm. that problem solver? Is that what is that?
Oh, no, that's perfect. Problem solver. Fixer? God, right? Because you know what's best for him.
Nurture. Carrying on.
What was that?
Carrying on.
Warrior?
Worried mom.
So he's a worried mom as well as a
real person? No. Oh, I'm sorry.
What's up in the play? Aren't these the characters?
These are your roles.
Oh, these are all mine.
These are all your past characters that are showing up for you.
Oh, for me.
So think about this. Is the provider, right? Think of this as being like, this is the cast of characters that shows up in this play. This play that you wrote, right? And mom is playing a role, stepson's playing a role, you're playing a role, God's playing a role, everybody's playing this role. Now, part of what I need to do is recognize what cast of characters is coming up for me. Because I guarantee you that these guys show up somewhere else in your life. This cast of characters, if this cast of characters will probably show up in 85% of our resentments. Women, we have Xena, we have the Vixen, we have the perfect mom, we have Superwoman, we have, like, awesome employee, we have, you know, virtuous boss, virtuous woman. We have these characters, and what happens is, when I start getting teed off, when I start having that resentment, when I start having that rumbly thing in my tummy, one of these guys is coming to the light. And what helps is, it's sort of like a shorthand for 10 step. I can recognize this character or this role that I play or this belief system I have. The belief system for the provider. We talked about that. Right? That's your pocketbook. Spiritual dad, that's your ambitions. Alpha, that's sex relations, personal relations, and ambitions. Virtuous man, ambitions, sex relations, personal relations. Bad boy. You kind of see what I'm laying down here? So when you think about it, say that this is my third column, and this is the story I tell myself in the third column, and the people who show up because of that story. The roles that I play in my relationship because of that story. Is this making sense to you? So these characters kind of speak in your third column. So it's a really good, and it's silly and it's fun. It's a fun way to do inventory. But what it does is it helps me to see, like, hey, you know what? Miss AA, or my sponsor calls it the bleeding deacon, shows up in my home group when they're not doing the business meeting right. Right? the spiritual warrior shows up when somebody has the nerve to talk to one of my sponsors in their mind. The hostage taker happens when I make prank phone calls at people who 13-step my sponsees. I have a hostage taker. And so I kind of look at this and say, it's a kind of a shorthand or a quick way to kind of get to the crux of the matter, which is my fourth column, and the belief systems or fears that I have associated with that. So when we kind of go back to this third column, right, we said, what's the biggest fear you have in regards to this?
It creates a wedge between my wife and I, my sex and personal relations with my wife.
Okay. So that your relationship, your marriage will suffer?
Yes.
Lose my marriage. Okay. What else? What's going to happen to your stepson?
Is it going to turn out like you?
It's a struggle because of it.
Will that be changed in the relationship that you'll have when he leaves the house?
Say again?
When he leaves the house, you know, he's going to grow up and leave, and you have an opportunity for a new relationship, deeper relationship with your wife, and you're afraid that's not going to happen.
No, I'm really looking forward to that.
Is
that not at all?
Yeah.
However, in the interim, when she's fixed on the fact that she feels like a bad mom, that she feels like, this kid's doing nothing, and you know, he's on his way out, and she's in a place that is so far removed from, I can't reach her there.
I
just need to be quiet.
I'm powerless and can't help my wife. And watch her, she's in pain.
One thing that happens to me in similar situations is I project this future thing where the kid does crash and burn, but nobody has the integrity to come back and tell me I was right.
First inventories. You can't even do this with second inventories. But take a piece of inventory that keeps coming up again and again and again and again. Like say you have, it's this, like, different episodes but same resentment. This is a neat thing to do because it kind of really does cut down. So in this process of this little mini fifth step, we got to your greatest fear with this. Which is your wife's in pain and you can't help her. And you're powerless. And that's the crux here, is my hands are tied, I'm the husband. My job is to take care of, provide, protect, and love my family. And there's a circumstance here that I cannot fix. And I feel small next to it. So who are you really resenting? Alcoholism? Yourself, God, her.
Keep going. I'm still in on the all the above.
Exactly, and that's my point.
Okay.
No, and that's my point. That's why I keep listening. Gotcha. That's my point. It's because my resentment with you is my resentment with 10 or 15 other things. Yeah. Resentment and fear is like a bowl of fish hooks, guys. You put your hand in one and 15 come out. That's why it has so much gosh darn power over us. It's why we can't be rid of self. It's why we can't think our way through resentment. It's why we can't think our way through selfishness or dishonesty, resentment, or fear, or self-seeking. It's why it has so much gosh darn power, because one resentment is attached to 15 other ones. Or 15 other ideas, beliefs, things. That's why they say that fear is the corroded thread that is shot, our life is shot through with it, right? Because and they class fear with stealing because it robs us and others of the ability to feel safe around us, because when I'm afraid, I'm a cornered Wolverine who's going to bite your ankles or fight for what I think is right or respond, react in ways that are not always becoming of a spiritual woman. And that's because I'm hurt, threatened, and interfered with. So this stuff has so much power because there's so much attached to it. And when I say that, you know, when we look at inventory and we were going deeper, because we're looking at, and I want you to see how the resentment with your wife for enabling behavior stems back to you, probably your mom for enabling you, your stepson, with alcoholism, with God, with the circumstances, with marriage, with the your wife's alcohol. Is your wife an alcoholic?
No.
No? Okay. So the guilt that she has is associated with another thing that goes on in her life? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what that circumstance is attached to? There's a lot of things. It's, that's why it's like that.
So it could be years before you can get to the crux of it.
No. Well, yes and no. We're always getting to the crux of things. There's always a deeper level to go to. There's, like, you don't ever just go, I'm done. You know, it doesn't work that way. I mean, that's why this stuff is so powerful and why it's so incredible and why we go through inventory again and again and again, because just when I think I have it, there's something deeper or more profound that I can see. And it's not navel-gazing, because I think a lot of times people take that and say, they'll take an inventory like this and like, okay, I'm good, I'm navel-gazed, I'm good. But what it does is it brings an awareness to my daily life, it brings an awareness to my thinking, brings an awareness to my mental review, it brings an awareness to my meditation, it brings an awareness in how I walk through this world. So it brings an awareness.
How about uncovers old ideas?
Thank you. Absolutely. Uncovered old ideas that I didn't even know I had.
Yeah.
And every time I uncover an old idea, what do I find underneath it? Another old idea. Right? And again, old ideas are not bad.
Help on the old idea piece.
Okay.
Please.
An old idea. Do you want to explain what an old idea is, Mike?
Yeah. It's something that's true. I operate on as a piece of truth until I find out it's a lie. It's kind of like a when the tide's in, I don't see the rock that's going to take the bottom out of my boat. It's for example, being driven by image and not even knowing it. Okay, I'm a dad. You're the stepmom. For you to really love me, my job is to solve your problems. I remember my mother just always being in awe of my father and telling me how wonderful my, don't worry, your dad will take care of it. Don't worry, dad, you know, you can always count on your dad and everything else. Well, now, I don't know that, but I picked this up and I carry it along. Another old idea that a bunch of us did some work years ago, back with Tim Lauder, as a matter of fact, looking at how many of my old ideas came out of bad old music I listened to. Song from the 50s, I heard the older kids singing, you know, I will never love you, the cost of love's too dear, but though I'll never love you, I'll stay with you 1 year. And so, look at all these relationships. I'm there for a while, and then I gotta go. And I didn't even know that I had a bad old song lyric driving that stuff. And it'll be different things for different people, but I pick up these ideas, and they sound like wisdom at the time. You know, never let a woman really know you love her because she'll never believe she can love and you can love and trust her at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So think what that'll do for your relationships, you know. And I don't even know that's there until I start doing some of this work. And so I write the inventory, I make the amend, I clean up the mess, but I'm going to be right back in the same jackpot down the road, because I don't know what's driving that behavior in me. I'm being driven by an idea that I don't even know is there.
Yeah.
So, when you spoke earlier about making sure that you're adding principles into the fourth step, mm-hmm. I had not in all these years. Mm-hmm. And so I spent some you know, specific time with that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that came up with this is, it may also fit into that category, which is a real man does.
We miss principal inventory, and you know, you have a great point. I mean, and it's triage, guys. Like, first I gotta clean up the people that I'm about to murder in their sleep. Then I gotta clean up the people that I'm making want to murder me in my sleep. And then I learn how not to pee on the rug. And I call, you know, like, that's like the little nasty stuff that we do. But when it comes down to, a lot of times, and this is what I was saying, is that we rewrite our first and second column. Because, yeah, principles are huge. Ideas, yeah, and you're exact, that's exactly it. Real men do. And when we write our inventory, and that was the, you stole my thunder, thank you very much. I was telling you that when we rewrite, when we do this, after we're finished with the fourth column, we go back and we ask ourselves, who are we really mad at? What are we really, what is really getting me, hitting me, or eating my lunch with this resentment? And a lot of times it's a principle. And I can pull that principle out, and I inventory that principle. And that generalizes to a lot of different things, doesn't it? So real man do generalizes to you at work, you and your marriage, you and your relationship with your son, your relationship with yourself, your relationship with God, your relationship in your home group, your relationship as a sponsor, your relationship as a sponsee, your relationship as a brother, as a son. As a, get where I'm going?
Carrie, me and Pamela have a little idea, and I've done a little bit of work on it. It's the same thing. And I had a lot of them that I didn't know I had. Like one I got from my father was about my worthiness. Mm-hmm. And I was 4 years old. But I lived that for 50 years, trying to prove my worth. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know I was operating under that old idea.
Yeah.
But it was so wise, and it came from this big guy, my dad, and it just lodged in there.
Yeah.
And I heard a lady, Mitty, talking about, she was going ballistic because her parents were coming to visit for a holiday, and her mother just had ideas about how the house is supposed to look. And she almost couldn't handle it because she had an old idea that she'd got from a parent about her house is supposed to look on a holiday.
Yeah.
But I'm living my life, and I'm making terrible decisions based on stuff I don't even know is inside me.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. But check this out. I'm going to take it one little step. Like, if I haven't blown your hair back enough. Okay. This is, guys, this is...
No.
You're... No, this is... You'll like this. Trust me. So, let's write your fourth column. Well, let's do it this way. Where are you selfish in regards to your self-esteem instinct? All right, how is selfishness showing up for you with your self-esteem?
Time and attention.
Okay.
With my wife.
I want... Cat, how is dishonesty showing up? So this is not dishonesty showing up. Even though our demands are reasonable, aren't they still demands? You need to pay attention. I want your time. Am I not making a demand on you?
I'd say it's actually, when I have to do this, I'm now withholding.
Okay.
So the dishonesty in that is that I'm not going to be present for you.
Okay.
I need that in order to figure out what the hell's going on for next step.
Okay. How are you self-esteem? In your self-esteem. Just in your self-esteem. How are you self-seeking? What am I doing? Am I using you to feel good about myself? Am I using my relationship? And am I using you to make me feel warm and fuzzy, to give me a sense of self-worth? Am I using my, this is where the roles came in. I don't think they were coming back around full circle. My role as a husband, my role as a wife, my role as a provider, my role as a parent, am I not using that to feel good about me?
Sure. Confirmation.
Exactly. So, using for self. Okay? So where am I frightened? What am I afraid of? With self-esteem.
I'm not going to get my needs met. I'm not going to get
What, why wouldn't I meet your, meet your needs? What would make me not want to do that by myself?
Because you're either unavailable because you're dealing with something within, or you're resentful or frustrated at me because my...
What does that mean about how, if I'm your wife, and I'm knowing that you have these needs, but I'm not meeting them, what does that mean about how I feel about you?
Disrespect, lack of love.
No love. No respect. Not good enough.
So if you love me, you'll meet my needs.
Right? Exactly. And that's the principle. And that's where it's taken full circle. And that's the story I tell myself in self-esteem. And we do it down pride. I look at the verbal in my hand when you're trying to can't read it anyway. Pride. How am I being selfish with pride? I need you to like me all the time. I need to be seen as being the spiritual person all the time. Other people must see me as being spiritual. I want a reputation I don't deserve. How am I dishonest? I'm reading your mind. I've already decided how I want you to see me. And now I'm reading your mind and deciding how you really see me without me actually asking you or talking about it anyway. And I'm also trying to control how you see me. So I'm also playing God and making demands. How am I self-seeking? Well, if you think I'm awesome, then I feel awesome, right? And if you think I'm awesome, then other people think I'm awesome. And the more people who think I'm awesome, the less unawesome I feel. So I use your regard and approval in order to market for myself.
Except that creates fear because now I've got to hang on to it.
Exactly.
And you can't see who I really am.
Exactly. Which is, then you're going to find out that what I'm representing to everyone is not who I am. Fear of being found out. Fear of rejection, abandonment, and not being loved. And then what happens if we're not loved? If I'm not loved, I'm alone. Because I don't like me. I'm already assuming I don't like me. If I'm afraid of you not loving me, most of the time it's because I'm assuming I'm unlovable. Mm-hmm. We come back down to personal relationships. How's selfishness showing up? I'm using my personal relationships in order to feel better, feel good about myself. I need attention, approval, acceptance, and love. And if I don't get it, I become emotionally dishonest or manipulate or pout or passive-aggressive. Or I play God, I read your mind. Or I place you in a position where you have to choose between me and somebody else, and then I assume you're not going to choose me, and then I respond to that anyway. Because I'm reading your mind, because I'm playing God, because I've created a script. Right? Self-seeking. You kind of see how that goes? And if you can break down all of these seven areas of self and look for where the selfishness, dishonesty, the self-seeking, fear, and inconsiderateness shows up. We forget that a lot, the inconsiderate. Some people put that on the resentment inventory, some people don't. I know it shows up in conduct inventory. So I kind of look at it like it's on the conduct inventory for a reason. But you can also look at it and say, well, where does that show up here? And really, I think that selfishness and self-seeking shows up as inconsiderateness.
What's PP?
Oh, it's PR, personal relations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I definitely said Trojan's handwriting. Okay. So you're kind of seeing how the theater of the lie goes?
Carrie, can you do a pocketbook?
Pocketbook. With this specific resentment?
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, how am I selfish in regards to my pocketbook? In this specific one. Is my money mine?
It's my money.
Mm-hmm. So I'm selfish because it's mine.
I'm thinking more though of the past actual money part that you were discussing earlier.
Like?
Time.
Okay, we're getting there. So we take it on the literal level. My money's mine. Your money's mine. And You shouldn't make me spend my money. We're on that literal level of selfishness. But then we come back to time and energy, right? So how is the time, energy, what am I not willing to pay up to be free, and selfishness show up here? Am I saying to the people in my life, you need to change for me to be okay? I want or need your acceptance, approval, and love at all times for me to feel safe or okay in our relationship. Or at least, you need to be enough so that I don't feel, so I don't put myself in the same boat with my stepson and act as your child instead of your spouse. I'm not saying you do that, I'm just using that as an example.
Plus the amount of time that I spend thinking about this, plotting how to change it.
Exactly.
All about it, like, maybe telling my friends about it. I'm wasting time, I'm not present at the moment, I'm not helping anybody, I'm just...
So I become emotionally unavailable? What about the time I write, the time I spend writing inventory on the same damn resentment? Because what I'm really doing is writing the resentment, hoping, drinking poison, hoping you're going to change. Without actually communicating what I need to communicate.
Okay, so the place I end up landing here is that what I'm asked to do is to trust that my wife loves me, even in the midst of what seems like something that would say otherwise, and appreciate the grace that she gives him, because that's who I fell in love with. So when I think about the pocketbook piece, it's how do I trust? How do I be willing to trust her? Period.
Sure. And that's a great point. How do you do that? What does trust mean? What does love mean? Maybe with your fundamental concepts of trust and love are things that you need to pay up to be for.
Okay, try me again on that.
How do you define love? What is your definition of love? Love me. You say that, trust that my wife loves me. What does that mean?
Outside of mutual affection, time spent, shared experience, I'm trying to come up with a definition.
More affection for me than any other person.
Worship me.
Make me important.
Make my neighbors.
So maybe my old ideas about love were the selfishness, dishonesty. That to love me means you have to put me above all people or all things. There's a definition of love that I love, and I did not make it up. M. Scott Peck did. He said that love was placing one's own spiritual or emotional needs above our selfish wants and desires. So love is me putting your spiritual emotional needs above my selfish wants and desires. There's a lot of versions of love. There's agape, right? There's spiritual love. What love are you looking for? What is it that you really want from this relationship? What is it that you really want from your wife? Are you asking for it? Have you sat her down and say, this is what love means to me. This is how my spirit responds to and feels this specific concept or principle. And this is what I need. Can you provide it? Can you show up? How can you show up? Where can we meet in the middle? What do you think love is? What is your definition, wife, dear, wonderful woman that you are? What are your needs? How can I show up for you? How can I put aside my own selfish needs for your emotional or spiritual growth? Just a consideration. I don't know. I mean, like, maybe you have a wonderful definition of love. But this is a question we ask ourselves. We say we want love. I want love. I want love. I want love. What are you really asking for? We don't even know we're like, I just want you to love me, but I really don't know what love means. What I really think it means is that you make me feel good about myself. Maybe it's intimacy for you. You got to find your love language. You have to find the way that your spirit responds to love for you to even know what you're asking for. So you're asking for something, but you don't really know what you're asking for, and you're expecting her to know it. But you don't even know it. So how can you expect her to know what you need when you don't even know? That's the dishonesty.
Oh, and by the way, how much is enough?
Exactly. Do we quantify it?
I thought you were going to say who's on first.
No.
There's a question that I've been taught to ask myself in this column, mm-hmm. and it's who do I think I am? And what that looks like is, and sometimes when if I answer this correctly, it diffuses all the rest of this, and yeah. It just goes away. I ask myself, what's my primary? Because I had a stepson before the divorce, and we were in a lot of counseling and blah 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 blah, and I had a lot of anger and frustration because he wasn't, you know, because he was doing dangerous, stupid, dumb things. And the question was asked to me, why are you so angry? And I said, because he won't do what he's supposed to do. And he said, so you can't control it. So what I asked myself was, what's my primary purpose in this relationship?
Yes.
And in my stepson, I had a completely misconception of what my primary purpose in that relationship was. Mm-hmm. He had a father who was very active in his life, and I was not him. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't supposed to be the one making the judgments I was making, trying to control the things that his mother was doing or not doing. And once I realized this, and I just stepped back, it's like, it's none of my business.
Yeah.
And it helped. And all that other stuff just went away.
So, and that's a great question. I love that. And that's exactly it. It's like, you know, it goes back to that cast of characters. Who am I in this? Is Superwoman showing up? Is Super Dad showing up? Is Super Husband showing up? Is King Baby showing up? I know you all hate King Baby, but King Baby, that I heard a high chair and some rattles going on. I want love. I don't even know what it is, but I want it. Although when I got it.
I deserve it.
Yes.
You know those car seats that have a steering wheel? Like, I think the steering wheel's connected to something.
You volunteered. This was a great resentment, and thank goodness you've done the inventory that you've done, that you have so much insight that we can kind of giggle at how crazy we can be. And this is some pretty deep stuff. And like, you already came to this with a very deep understanding of this resentment. And some of this stuff might stick and resonate with your spirit, and some of it may not. But if one or two aspects of what we just did really hit you in the gut, you got to a deeper level. You faced some agnosticisms inside of you, and that's kind of the point. It's not everything that we throw up here is going to fit 100%, 100% of the time. It's your inventory. It's your dishonesty. It's going to show up in your way. But we talk about these principles, and we come back to them. I said, we're going to come all the way back around to the sick man's prayer and say, one, I've been in that first and second column myself. So a lot of times I'm asking for things that I'm not even willing to provide or haven't provided. And then we come back around again and say, what old idea is keeping me trapped in this cycle of resentment? Because if I can identify that old idea, I can get free of all of the resentments that are attached to that old idea. I'm going to pick up a new old idea. You're always going to have a new old idea. That's the thing, is we're idea makers.
Well, and it's an open book exam, because at the end of the day, I've got only two answers. Mm-hmm. I've either got to forgive you or make amends.
Yep.
Well, there is no door number three.
Mm-hmm. Or both.
Or I can, yeah, or both.
Yeah.
Keep cycling on the crazy carousel.
Yeah. So we can always uncover a new old idea, and this just helps. It's another way of looking at inventory. Our egos, and I'll kind of finish it up with this because it's almost dinner time. Our egos get really attached to stuff, and especially if you're a step working individual like myself. And so I can write four column inventory in my sleep and mean absolutely nothing of it. Sounds great. You'll read it and you'll be like, man, that was insightful. And I'm like, yeah. Because me giving you 80% of what I'm willing to present to you sounds really good because I've written so much inventory that it sounds really good. And there's a, and again, one of my spiritual teachers talked about doing the work to not do the work. That we'll do 80 or even 85% of the work. And to everyone else, it looks like we're showing up, but there's that 15% that I'm holding back. Those couple old ideas that I'm like, that's mine, and you can't have it, and don't you dare touch it, and don't even come near it, or I'm gonna bite you. And what happens is that we have this presentation of this spiritual being, and we have that 15% of things that we're just kind of holding on to. And I, for me, I struggled with work. That was a big one. My marriage was huge. Part of the reason why some of this stuff was so ready for me is like, you think I haven't written this inventory a couple times this year? A little bit, you know? And so the idea here is, we're always going to have these areas. We're going to have areas in which old ideas, or what were new ideas, have now become old ideas. You know, where our ego will grab onto a process or a step process. You ever make an amends and you actually made an amends, but you didn't make the amends? Because you walked away and you still kind of had that thing in your heart. You said all the right words, but it wasn't amended, was it? Because it was that little bit. Because we were so good at tricking ourselves. We're so good at doing the work to not do the work. And I'm going to tell you something, and I know for a fact that there are people in this room who can verify it, is that there are people who have done this stuff for a long time, who are wonderful, wonderful spiritual teachers, who did the work to not do the work, and they died in very unhappy ways. Some of them went home, and they went home to God with that clean slate and that open soul, and some of them went home almost as sick as when they got here. Because we got so busy doing the work and being AA big shots and superstars that we forgot that AA big shot superstar and that work I did last week or last year or last month is not going to buy me my spiritual experience today. That inventory I wrote last year is outdated because I've acquired new old ideas that I need to be disabused from. Are we going to die and drink or burst into flames because I have an old idea? No. It's a question of how free do I want to be. You can do the work to not do the work and probably maintain being abstinent from alcohol. But you probably will be at some point crazier than a shithouse rat. Because you know you're not happy and you know you should be and you don't know why. You kind of know why. But you can't figure out why what you did 10 years ago isn't buying you the freedom that you have to, that you think you should have today. So you'll hear, I used to be really happy. When I did the work 10 years ago, I had this profound experience. And I'm thinking, when I did the work 5 months ago, I had a profound experience. So why is it that you're telling me about an experience you had 10 years ago? Is there an old idea that you held on to in your most recent one that prevented you from having that profound experience? I don't know. But maybe, just maybe, you do. So in essence, we kind of limit ourselves and our experience based on, well, I did that. I addressed that. Or I'm free in that area. And maybe we are, but maybe we could be freer. And if you keep doing that over time, you will get spiritual plaque. And then you'll start doing some crazy, stupid shit. And then you'll wonder why you have 30 years and you're doing some stuff. You're juggling knives and chainsaws. And the shame that comes with that sometimes keeps you from asking for the help you need to have or you need to ask for. So in my experience is that when we do this little silly stuff, when we trick the ego, we trick our alcoholism, we can sometimes get to a little bit deeper level of truth. But with that, I'm going to let you all go.